Hello and welcome to the Master of Yimeng Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about Shi Jing Tang. We've stepped away from the five dynasties and ten kingdoms lately. But today, let's get back into it. Today, let's talk about a character whose choices, whose actions would truly prove consequential. Remember, the era known as the Five Dynasties and Ten Kingdoms stretched from 907 AD, with the fall of the Tang Dynasty, to either 960 with the founding of the Song Dynasty, or to 979 with the completion of the Song Conquest. So we're talking about someone who lived in the 10th century. But his choices would continue to affect China, some might say plague China, for over 400 years until the second half of the 14th century. Today we're talking about Shi Jing Tang. You may remember something of our episodes on Li Ke Yong, Li Cun Xu, and Li Si Yuan. Just a quick refresher, the Li family were all members of the Sha Tuo race. Li Ke Yong was a warlord in the late Tang Dynasty who, after the fall of the Tang in 907, claimed the Tang mantle and fought against Zhu Wen after the latter overthrew the Tang and proclaimed his own Liang Dynasty. Later, his son and heir, Li Cun Xu, declared himself emperor of the latter Tang, still claiming the Tang legacy. Then, Li Cun Xu's adoptive brother, Li Si Yuan, overthrew him in a coup, albeit reluctantly, and succeeded him as emperor of the latter Tang. You may remember we talked about how Li Si Yuan decided to overthrow his brother. It was in no small part because he was persuaded to do so by his son-in-law, Shi Jing Tang. Shi Jing Tang was born in 892 AD. Just to put him in chronological context, this meant he was 15 when Zhu Wen overthrew the Tang Dynasty. And he was 34 when his father-in-law, Li Si Yuan, made himself emperor of the latter Tang in 926. There is some confusion as to Shi Jing Tang's background. Given that the Li family was of Sha Tuo origin and Shi Jing Tang was a member of their inner circle, it seems reasonable to assume that he was Sha Tuo as well. And his father, Shi Shaoyong, also went by a Sha Tuo name, Nie Lie Ji, a very strange name if you know Chinese, when he served as an officer under Li Ke Yong and Li Cun Xu. The old history of the five dynasties, note that the official history of this period got written twice, so there is an old version as well as a new, says that the Shi family was actually descended from Chancellor Shi Fen, who served under Emperor Jing Di of the Han Dynasty. And Shi Fen was in turn descended from Shi Qu, a high-ranking official of the state of Wei, during the spring and autumn period back in the 8th century BC. If this is true, then Shi Jing Tang was a man of ancient and noble Han Chinese lineage. But it seems that he might have made this up about himself to elevate his own status. Also, maybe both are true. Maybe he was descended from these ancient Han Chinese statesman, but was also of Sha Tuo stock. Any number of intermarriages could have happened in the intervening centuries, not to mention any number of adoptions. The new history of the Five Dynasties, which is considered superior to the old history because it was chiefly written by the great Song Dynasty statesman Ouyang Xiu, states 其姓石氏，不知其德性之始也。His surname was Shi, but it is impossible to know the origin of this surname. In any event, Shi Jingtang grew up to be a capable warrior, so that the Li brothers, Li Cunxu, and Li Siyuan, both wanted him serving in their army. He ended up with Li Siyuan, who also married his daughter to him. At a battle in 916, Shi Jingtang showed his mettle, leading only a handful of troops in a cavalry charge that threw the enemy into confusion, after which his reputation grew. He did it again in 917 and 918, winning difficult victories and rescuing his father-in-law. Further feats of arms followed in 921, 922, and 923. 923 was the year when Li Cunxu declared himself emperor. And he sent his adoptive brother, Li Siyuan, to go and destroy the latter Liang, the regime of Zhu Wen and his descendants. And Li Siyuan, in turn, had his son-in-law, Shi Jingtang, take the lead. So it was that, during this campaign, that led to the final destruction of the latter Liang, Shi Jingtang played a crucial role. Although, because he was not one to brag about his own feats, at the time, he didn't receive the promotion that was his due. And you may remember what then happened in 926. Li Cunxu, as emperor, had grown erratic, particularly through his obsession with becoming an actor. So there was a massive rebellion. He wound up sending his brother, Li Siyuan, to put it down. But when Li Siyuan got there, the rebels welcomed him with open arms and claimed to support him for the throne. Li Siyuan had no plans to betray his brother, so he initially wanted to go back to the emperor to explain what had happened. It was his son-in-law, Shi Jingtang, who at the time told him to wake the hell up. There was no way that a jealous and already half-crazed emperor would believe that about his brother, with his own impressive military track record, not after the rebels proclaimed their allegiance to him. So now Li Siyuan had no choice but to adopt the rebellion as his own and to march on the capital. He displaced his brother and became the new emperor of the latter Tang. And during this campaign, Shi Jingtang again served as the vanguard. For his troubles, not to mention for pointing out the obvious to Li Siyuan, Shi Jingtang was promoted to various top jobs. But in 933, reports came that the Khitan race was encroaching from the north. They're going to turn out to be important, so although we've talked about them before, here's another reminder. The Khitan people were a nomadic people, initially not considered Chinese. In 916, their leader, Yelü Abaoji, had declared their own empire in the north, eventually called the Liao Dynasty. And he took pains to adopt Chinese culture and to hold out his country as legitimately Chinese, even Confucian. Anyway, so in 933, they were encroaching on the borders of the latter Tang. Shi Jingtang went north to take command of the large border region. As he said goodbye to his son-in-law, the emperor wept profusely, surprising his advisors. It turned out to be the last time that father-in-law and son-in-law would see each other, as Li Siyuan fell ill and died just a few months later. And after he died, his sons fought each other for the throne. One son, Li Conghou, took the throne. Another son, Li Congke, immediately launched a coup. In the end, Xu Jintang sided with Li Congke, who won the power struggle and became emperor. But Li Congke didn't trust Xu Jintang, despite the help he gave him and despite the fact that he was his brother-in-law. So after Xu Jintang went back to the capital to attend his father-in-law's funeral, Li Congke wouldn't let him leave, wouldn't let him go back to the region where he held command. Li Congke's sister, Xu Jintang's wife, now tried her best to defend her husband. It so happened that Xu Jintang fell ill at this time and lost a lot of weight. Between his sister's entreaties and seeing how sick Xu Jintang looked, Li Congke decided that the man wasn't as much of a threat as he feared after all. So he let him go. He would come to rue the day. After he returned to his command, Xu Jintang took care to keep up the appearance of illness. At the same time, he repeatedly reported Khitan attacks that never actually happened, so as to request additional shipments of weapons and supplies to the front, which materiel he then kept for a future date. A couple of years later, in 936, he decided to test the waters. He wrote a letter to Li Congke, ostensibly resigning his command. The idea was that if Li Congke still doubted him, then he would accept the resignation as the perfect opportunity to fire him. But if Li Congke no longer was hostile to him, that he would ask Xu Jintang to stay. Faithfully, Li Congke accepted the resignation. And so Xu Jintang rebelled. Li Congke issued a decree firing Xu Jintang from his command and sending an army to attack him. Xu Jintang and his men held off Li Congke's troops for a while, but it became apparent that Xu Jintang didn't have enough manpower and resources to defeat his brother-in-law. So he made the decision for which he became most famous, or rather infamous, the decision that would impact Chinese history until the second half of the 14th century. He sent an embassy to the Khitan Liao Empire to the north, the very enemy that he was supposed to hold at bay. And he cut a deal with Yelü Deguang, the son of Yelü Abaoji and now the second emperor of the Liao Empire. If the Liao would come south with an army to aid Xu Jintang, then, he promised, he would hand over the 16 provinces of Yan Yun to Liao control. The 16 provinces of Yan Yun were the borderlands, including a large section of the Great Wall. If the Khitan gained control of this area, then the Great Wall would become useless as a defense against invasions from the north. And as there were no further natural defenses between here and the Chinese heartland, central northern China would be vulnerable to future invasions. Neither would it be easy for any central Chinese regime to retake the 16 provinces once they were lost. Not only did Xu Jintang promise to hand over this strategic area, but he also flattered Yelü Deguang by calling him the father emperor, as to himself, the child emperor. And he agreed to pay tributes to the Liao Empire. In other words, he cast his own regime in the Chinese heartland as inferior to, junior to, a northern regime founded by a nomadic people, at the time not considered Chinese. Even at the time, even his own advisors, including a man named Liu Zhiyuan, who would turn out to be important, thought this was too much, that Xu Jintang was making a terrible mistake. But he didn't listen to them. The Liao eagerly seized the opportunity. Ye Lü De Guang led an army through the gates of the Wild Geese southward, smashing the army of the latter Tang. Then, late in 936, Ye Lü De Guang proclaimed his junior partner, Shi Jingtang, emperor of a new dynasty called the latter Qin. And Shi Jingtang lived up to his end of the bargain, handing over the 16 provinces and paying tributes. I said this was a decision that would haunt Chinese history until the second half of the 14th century, because it proved, indeed, impossible for central Chinese regimes to retake the 16 provinces of Yanyun for centuries to come. The Song Dynasty, founded in 960, managed to destroy all rival regimes within the Chinese heartland by 979, but it was never able to retake the 16 provinces. It spent years fighting the Liao Empire before finally reaching a sort of modus vivendi in 1005 with the Treaty of Tanyuan. Under that treaty, the Liao retained the 16 provinces. So northern central China remained vulnerable to invasions from the north. After the Jurchen Jing Empire replaced the Khitan Liao, they were able to sweep down and destroy the northern Song dynasty between 1125 and 1127, so that the Song retreated to the south to become the southern Song dynasty. And eventually the Mongols replaced the Jurchens and finally swept down to destroy the Song. Only after the Ming dynasty overthrew the Mongol Yuan dynasty in 1368 was a Han Chinese government again able to control the 16 provinces. Only then was the Great Wall once again of any use. In any event, Shi Jingtang, meanwhile, finished off the latter Tang and ruled over his latter Jing Empire. Except his was a dynasty that ultimately relied on Khitan support. It was like a vassal or client state. His decision to accept Khitan suzerainty was ultimately too controversial. Many of his own officers demanded that he turn around and fight the Khitan. In 942, he had one of his own generals killed for making this demand. With many of the Mandarin class disagreeing with him, Shi Jingtang took to favoring the eunuchs, who were meant only to be household servants, but who were often able to arrogate power upon themselves. He also implemented various cruel punishments against regular citizens who opposed him, such as cutting out people's tongues, amputating their limbs, boiling people alive, you know, the usual. Meanwhile, he appointed his general Liu Zhiyuan to a province. Liu Zhiyuan, remember, had opposed his handing over of the 16 provinces. Another nomadic tribe, the Tu Yuhun tribe of the Xianbei people, now refused to accept Khitan rule and went into the area under Liu Zhiyuan's control to seek his protection. In 942, the Khitan came to Shi Jingtang, demanding that he order Liu Zhiyuan to give over the Tu Yuhun. Caught between competing interests, being able to offend neither his powerful deputy Liu Zhiyuan nor his patrons the Khitans, Shi Jingtang died in a state of indecision, aged 50. Although Shi Jingtang had had 7 sons, 6 of them predeceased him. The last one was still too young. So, upon his death, he passed the throne to his nephew and adoptive son, Shi Chonggui, who was born in 914, so was 28 years old at this time. Shi Chonggui tried to reverse his uncle's policy of sucking up to the Khitans. But of course, once the Khitans had gotten used to having this client state, they weren't going to tolerate any move toward greater independence. So, just 2 years later, in 944, the Khitan Empire launched an invasion of the latter Qing. By 946, the Khitans had won, and Shi Chonggui surrendered, bringing an end to the short-lived dynasty that his uncle founded. With the destruction of the latter Qing, Shi Jingtang's erstwhile deputy, Liu Zhiyuan, in 947, declared himself emperor of yet another dynasty, the latter Han. This would now be the fourth of the so-called five dynasties. But his will be a story for another time. This has been MODG. Thank you for listening.